3, 2, welcome everyone to the Fantastics Inside of Baseball podcast. I'm Lou Blassie along with Brandon Cameron. We're from Fantastics and InsideOfBaseball.com. Maybe you found us on InsideOfBaseball.com, which is great. Check out the baseball blog while you're there and all the stuff that we have on the blog that's going to help you win championships, even if you're a non-subscriber, just like this podcast. And then if you follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, make sure you subscribe because we're not working on a regular basis here on the podcast. And we want you to know when we drop a new podcast, right, Brandon? Because it's topical information in here.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of the interesting times of the fantasy season, I think, where, you know, us at Fantastics who are invested in the statistics and the numbers, sometimes this is a little bit difficult because you have to figure out and parse through which ones you don't want to read too much into, but what you can use right now to further your information and to help you win.
Yeah, and that's what I want people to understand. And like I've mentioned this a couple times in the podcast on serious shows. I'm a little sensitive this year because up here in the Boston sports media market, there's been a war on analytics. So I'm a little sensitive to this. And we're picking on max exit velocity today. And that's not to say that max exit velocity is the silver bullet at telling us everything we need to know about a player. What we usually do, especially at this point in the season, we're in between. We don't have quite solid stat sample sizes to deal with, but we have to do a show on a particular day. So we have to come up with some insights and add some to the discussion. Plus, everyone's got waivers. And everyone's going to make cuts and everyone's going to make claims. So you need to make some decisions on some of these players as well. So normally what we do is we look at a stat to give us a list of players to break down and look at. It's basically an excuse. It doesn't tell us everything. It just draws our interest, right, to a particular player, and then we can break it down further.
Yeah, I think the first thing is, you know, a couple weeks into the season, don't panic. Whether you're doing well or doing poorly, you know, it's just so early. And so, you know, it really doesn't matter, I think, the standings right now and where you are. That being said, in terms of analyzing players, which is what we try to do and what we do best, is, you know, I mostly am trying to avoid averages, ratios, things like that. I mean, you can't completely avoid them. So I get it. We're going to look at it. You're going to factor that in, but it's just too small of a sample size right now for almost all of them. And then there are certain ones, like a lot of those Statcast ones, if you're looking at the averages, I mean, the batted ball events, like the amount of batted balls that these guys have hit, are so small. Like the sample size is so small, and so they just don't tell you a whole lot. That being said, you know, there are some things we can pull out of what's happened so far that can give us a little bit of a glimpse into certain things, like just how healthy is the guy right now? How confident is he? And is there an approach change? So those sorts of things are more than anything else what I think we're looking at this point.
Yeah, that's what we talked about over the last couple of weeks. So when we're looking this early in the season, we're looking for intentional changes in approach, either by a pitcher or a hitter. If he's going to be lifting the ball more, if he's going to be pulling the ball more, if he's going to be a little bit more aggressive at the plate and swing a little bit more, make contact a little bit more. Just because of a change of approach. Those are things we can kind of lean on a little bit to see what happens. Those ratios, especially the ones, the average stats, especially the ones that we particularly like, quality of contact on both sides, hitters and pitchers, they can be skewed so easily at this point in the season because you hit a couple of dribblers to the mound that are, you know, 10 mile an hour exit velocity, a 20 mile an hour exit velocity, and they're added into those averages and they can skew it down quite a bit. So you can't pay attention to that. You can't pay attention to launch angle because you get a few more ground balls and that adds negative launch angle and changes the ratio this early in the season on that launch angle. So yeah, the ones we depend on and rely on and like to deal with aren't not necessarily reliable to this point, which is why we're picking max exit velocity today. So why are we picking max exit velocity? Because you and Sky are big on it, and so big on it that you made me change my FanGraph dashboard, by the way, which is a big deal because I don't change it too often, but I've added max exit velocity. And so you guys are big on it. So explain to me why you like max exit velocity so much.
Yeah, I mean, again, if I'm doing a full season's analysis on a player, I am going to look at max exit velocity, but I'm certainly looking more in the averages and the ratios there, average exit velocity and things like that. The reason I do still consider it is it does give us an idea of just how much power a player can generate. And there are some misleading elements to that, which we will get into as we analyze some of these players. But it does give you an idea of kind of how capable this player is. And then furthermore, at this point in the season, I want to know, is the guy healthy? And you just can't hit 115 mile per hour fastball if your shoulder is hurting. Like, you can't hit a 115 mile per hour fastball, or sorry, 115 mile per hour batted ball if your wrist is sore. You know what I mean? Right. So the capability of hitting the ball that hard gives me just an idea this guy is healthy. And then it allows us to look a little bit deeper. And there are some deceiving elements, because there are always going to be at this point in the season. And max exit velocity is often going to be one that can put you in a deceiving place. That being said, it does tell me something, because if you look at the list of the top max exit velocity guys, it's guys who are doing pretty darn well to begin the season, generally speaking. And it is a lot of the same guys we will always see on this list, because there are some guys who are just, you know, we know are capable of hitting the ball really hard, but it also is some guys who are just having really nice starts to the season. So that does kind of validate to a certain extent, you know, checking it out and seeing and digging a little bit deeper into those players.
Yeah, you hit on a couple of the things that I like. First of all, the gauge of health is really important, and that's sometimes when a player is coming back from injury, you want to make sure that he's healthy. I always use it as a gauge for young players to see their comfort level. We know what a guy's raw power might be, and we know what his game power is capable of, but sometimes that comes in at a later stage of development as a player gets comfortable, a young hitter becomes comfortable, starts lifting the ball, starts pulling the ball, becomes less contact centric. Sometimes that max exit velocity will come up. So I'm gauging that with a young player too. And it helps me when I don't know the player, when I don't have a big track record, what his capabilities are. And the other thing you talked about, which is really important, whenever we get one of these new metrics, I'll sit there and I'll look at leaderboards, which is what we're doing today with max exit velocity to an extent. And does that leaderboard tell me that this metric is telling me the truth? Because I can look at the leaderboard on max exit velocity, and there's a couple outliers that we are going to talk about today. But for the most part, that's a pretty good looking list. It tells me what I think I already knew about the power capabilities of these guys.
Yeah, and that's ultimately at this point, you know, kind of where we're at is who is playing well and what are their numbers telling us? Who's struggling and what are their numbers telling us? You know, those sorts of things are, you know, just kind of what we have right now, because like we said, it's like you just can't overvalue the general, you know, stat sheets. You just can't overdo it. It's a couple weeks of games. I mean, these guys have 40 to 50 at bats. It's just not enough for us to read too much into it and to overvalue the numbers that we do have. So what are they capable of? What have they shown me so far? And you know, what does that tell me just kind of about what I can say about the way they're playing right now? And the hardest thing is, you know, we talk about max exit velocity giving us maybe a glimpse into the health of a player and their full capability is, well, that can change because they can get not healthy, right?
Right.
So, you know, they might hit a 150 mile per hour batted ball in April and they don't hit another one the rest of the year because they got a sore wrist or, you know, something along those lines. So those are the things that, you know, again, it's mid-April. We have to consider the fact that it's just a small sample size, but we got what we got right now and we got to do the best we can with it.
All right. So let me take you into the woods a little bit, because it comes around to this discussion of the latest battle in the war against analytics up here in the Boston media market, because Andrew Bailey has come in as the pitching coach for the Red Sox, and he's changed up the way deployment on the Red Sox pitching staff quite a bit, because, and the big quote that everybody's hitting on here is because, well, we looked into exit velocity and hard hit percentages on different types of pitchers. And the pitch that gets hit the hardest is fastballs. So we're going to throw less fastballs. And I'm paraphrasing, but that was basically the essence of Andrew Bailey's reasoning for his approach with the pitching staff to get away from fastballs. And I think at the point he said it, they were last in the league in fastball percentage there. So he's throwing a lot of, he's having the pitcher staff throw a lot of offseat pitches to keep hitters off balance, because his logic is fastballs get hit hard, so let's throw less fastballs. And first of all, I'm sure that's not his entire stance on it. It can't be, because as we all know, that's great, I guess. And that's data. And as I always say, there's no bad data. There's only bad analysis. That's good data. But by the same token, if a guy's throwing his off-speed pitchers not that well and he's not locating it that well, fastball might be the answer for him. So it's not about fastballs get hit harder. It's about can these guys execute the pitches he's asking them to hit. But as I looked at, and I was looking at Giancarlo Stanton, who's on the top of the list, who we're also going to, I'm taking you in the woods on with Giancarlo Stanton too, as I looked at it. He's leading the league right now at 116.7 max exit velocity. And you go, wow, that's pretty good. And then you start looking at him from year to year, and that's low on his list. He's been at 119, 120, 122. So this is, fairly low for him. So I was wondering about early season, and I went back and looked over year to year for the last two or three years. The max exit velocity in 2022 is 122.4, probably Judge or Stanton. 23 was 121.2, probably Judge or Stanton. I didn't look. And here in 24, it's 116.8. So there's a deflation of like 3.7%, and that's early season, right? We can chalk that up probably to early season here and weather issues and things like that.
Yeah, and just the fact that, again, sample size. I mean, tomorrow or today, somebody could hit 120 mile per hour, you know, bat at ball. But yeah, I mean, it tends to be these same guys who are at the top, with, you know, the variance of the guys that we do kind of want to point out that I found notable on the list. But yeah, Giancarlo Stanton, through all his difficulties and all his issues he's had really throughout the bulk of his career, he is capable of hitting the ball really, really hard. That's never been a question with Giancarlo Stanton. And he's actually had a pretty nice start to the season. You know, he's hitting in the 250s, which for him is excellent from where he's been the last couple of years. He does have four home runs. And so there is some development in terms of like what you want to see from certainly last season and even to a certain degree the season before. But yeah, I do think with Stanton, it's important to just make sure that he is still capable of hitting the ball that hard. You know, he's had his fair share of injuries, and he's had his periods of his career where he's not hitting the ball as hard. He's not capable of getting that, you know, exit velocity to that level just for short stints because of the injuries he deals with. He seems pretty healthy right now. That would probably change at any day, but he does seem pretty healthy right now. And, you know, he does have four home runs. What's interesting is he has two batted balls so far over at least 160 miles per hour. Both of them were on the ground and were singles. His home runs were actually, his hardest hit home run was 110 miles per hour.
Interesting.
So, you know, a guy who generally is going to hit the ball in the air, which is what you want with a guy like Giancarlo Stanton, and generally going to hit pull the ball. This was actually a little bit more deceiving in that sense. But at the same time, he is Giancarlo Stanton. He absolutely crushes the ball when he gets a hold of it, but he is swinging and missing a ton as usual, striking out a lot. But, you know, I mean, he's on a nice start for where you want him to be. And this is the guy who, you know, a few years ago was one of the top picks in fantasy drafts and has totally fallen off for a number of reasons. But he really was low on the list. But what he can do is provide you home runs when he plays. And he's got four of them so far.
Let me get back to Stanton in a second, because let's get back to Andrew Bailey for a second, because exit velocity 122, 121, 116 over the last 3 years. And it's a small sample and it's bad weather, early season sample. So I get it. And I'm not laying too much into it, and I'm not supporting Andrew Bailey on this, but fastball percentage in Major League Baseball has gone from 33, to 32.3 to 31.3 over that same time period. It's down 1.7%. By the way, that all went to split fingered fastballs. So, well, I mean, it didn't all go there. That's hitting it too simply. But split fingered fastballs are up 1.7%. Regular fastballs are down 1.7%. So I think there is a trend. I think Andrew Bailey was talking about a trend going away. And this is not related to our discussion. It's just when you start going down these rabbit holes, for me anyway, you just start digging into what's going on. And Andrew Bailey is probably voicing something that's going on as a trend in baseball. I think they're coming off fastballs a little bit, and I think we've seen it. And I think we've got teams like the Yankees who tried it a few years ago. We got a couple of teams that are doing it this year, the Red Sox being most notable among them. And again, don't get too involved in the Red Sox pitching staff, as we saw this week, because last week it was Oakland, it was Los Angeles, and it was Seattle slumping. So don't get too involved in any of those numbers. But we're going off the fastball limit, and we are going to off speed a little bit. And I think Velo isn't dead, but Velo can't be the top thing anymore. I think we've got to keep hitters off balance, and I think that's what we're doing in development, and I think that's what we're looking for pitchers. And so when we're looking for pitchers that are making gains, are they coming up with off-speed stuff, right? Are they mixing up there? Are they getting off their velocity and keeping hitters off balance more?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, we talk about this all the time. Baseball's cyclical, and you know, it's there are going to be waves and zigs. You know, when hitters are zigging, pitchers are going to zag, and vice versa. And it takes sometimes 2, 3, 4 years to make those zigs and zags. And you know, and so obviously when home runs were at a peak, and you know, there's just these massive swings and exit velocities were super high, pitching velocities were super high as well. And now there's the adjustment, and it is worth noting that the drop off in fastballs is going to lead to a drop off in strikeouts as well. Mm-hmm. Because as much as, you know, off speed pitches are generally the put away pitches, like you often need a good fastball to strike a guy out. And to at least get to the point where you can strike a guy out. I mean, that just
you've seen more tolerance for the quote unquote contact pitcher, and we don't like contact pitchers. I don't like contact pitchers. I like you be a punch guys out, but striking out guys seems to be a little bit less of an emphasis. And I think it's part of this thing of trying to get pitchers more efficient. We talked about limiting walks and how important that's becoming in Major League Baseball. I think strikeouts are a problem because they want to get that extra out of starting pitchers. They want to get them 5 2/3. They want to get them to 6, 6 1/3. I think we're seeing more of it in the early season than we expected to see, guys going into the sixth inning. And I think teams want pitchers to be more efficient. Strikeouts aren't efficient. Walks certainly aren't efficient.
Yeah, and as we've talked about before, is, you know, with the increase in stolen bases, which are actually down this year from last year, but it is early, but something to monitor at least. But generally speaking, with the increase in stolen bases, that, you know, you just want less guys getting free passes to first base, because that often can mean, you know, essentially a double for a free pass. But yeah, I mean, again, we went through the three true outcome phase where, you know, people were losing their minds, freaking out. And I get it. Like, you know, it wasn't the prettiest era of baseball, and we're still somewhat in the three true outcomes, but I do think we're at least making progress to get out of it. And these are some of the elements that we're talking about to get out of that. I don't think we're, you know, going to go just fully back to, you know, 1956 and, you know, and Lou Brock is, you know, the best player in baseball sort of a thing. But that being said, you know, we are making those strides to get, you know, somewhat away from the three true outcomes. And that really is a combination of what the pitchers are doing and what the hitters are doing.
All right. I took us into the woods too much. Max exit velocity is the discussion for today. I was just looking at some trends. This is what we're looking for early in the season, some trends that we can look into and track as we go forward. And I was just talking general baseball and approach at this point. Giancarlo Stanton's 2023 makes no sense to me on any level. I mean, the power is fine. The 191 batting average with the 210 BABIP, and it's a 219 expected batting average. His quality of contact stats were 48% hard hit, 15.7 barrel percent, and he averaged 93.3 in exit velocity. Does that add up to a 219 expected batting average for you? It's making me question some of these things, because his stat line makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't understand the sub 200, and I felt this the year before. So in 2022, he hit 211 with 31 home runs. And I remember going
contact all the way around.
Well, and I drafted him in a couple of leagues last year. I remember thinking, like, hey, he's going to rebound on that batting average. Like, not that we're expecting him to get to 260, 270 even, but, like, it's not 211. And then he goes out and hits 191. Now, he's always got the injury thing. That's the Giancarlo Stanton we know, right? And so, you know, you draft him knowing you're probably going to lose him for a good period of time. That being said, that doesn't explain. I mean, he still had excellent quality of contact, although it did dip off a little last year from the year before. You know, he had a 95 mile per hour average exit velocity, 19% barrel rate in 2022. And those are massive numbers.
Yeah.
Massive numbers.
He still only hit 211.
He still only hit 211. And that didn't make sense to me. And then it actually got worse last year, hit 191. I don't think, I mean, I do think that was a product of a lot of bad luck, but you know, I mean, you pointed out the BABIP. His BABIP for four straight seasons prior to 2022 was 320 or better. And then it dropped to 227. And then last year, 210. Well, how do we justify that? And there were some minor changes in his profile, but how do we justify a 100-point loss from where his BABIP had been sitting for quite a while? You know, again, I do think there are reasons to believe there was going to be, there should have been a drop off in BABIP. I just don't think it should have been that one. So I think he had two straight years of bad luck.
Yeah. And he's not a particular fly ball pull guy, which can eat into that BABIP a little bit and eat up into the expected batting average as well. The point is, I'm wondering and we all know what the limiter is on Giancarlo Stanton. It's at bats, and you know, how valuable is he? Well, how many at bats is he going to get? If he gets the 500 at bat season, what is he capable of? Because he hit 24 homers last year in 371 at bats. He hit 31 homers in 398 bats the year before. He gets to 450. He gets to 475. He gets to 500. He's hitting 40 homers again.
Yeah, as long as this profile maintains, which I don't think there's any reason to believe it won't, and I think his batting average should be better. He strikes out a ton, and so that's going to limit his overall batting average from being good. But you know, if you get to even a 230, 235 batting average out of him with 40 homers, that's a slam dunk from where you drafted him.
Yeah.
And so, and ultimately you draft, I mean, if you're in a roto league, you draft Giancarlo Stanton to hit home runs. I mean, that's why you drafted him. Right. And you know, I think when he plays, he's going to hit home runs. And, you know, you don't want any season where we put together this list of top exit velocity, max exit velocity, and Giancarlo Stanton's not on it. That's where I'm concerned about. That's the season I'm concerned about Giancarlo Stanton, because the one thing he does better than almost anyone else, you know, that he does among the best in baseball, is has the ability to hit the ball harder than anybody, or like, again, harder than anybody, but maybe two or three guys.
And none of it makes sense, because, again, so far this year, in its small sample, 16% swinging strike rate, 43% chase rate. You would think that would lead to low batting average. And by the way, he's pulling the ball 59% of the time. You'd think that's all lead to low batting average. He's got a 304 BABIP and a 256 batting average, which would be fine. If we had 256 for the rest of the season, we'd be ecstatic.
Yeah, you know, one thing about Stanton, though, is his launch angle is either really high or really low.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a stat that, you know, I've talked about before in the past that I, you know, think probably confuses people. So I don't like to bring it up too much, called sweet spot. And it's on StatCast, and it sort of basically gives you an idea of like how much are they driving the ball? Like basically line drives. And this year it's high, but and that's part of the reason I'm explaining, is because it does justify somewhat of why his batting average is higher. It generally is very low relative to the rest of the league. So that's small sample size. I don't want to read into it. I don't want to go too much into the weeds on that, because that's just going to confuse people and probably, you know, lead somebody down the wrong path. But I do think in the small sample size, it's somewhat of the justification for the higher batting average. That being said, I don't think the batting average of the last two seasons is indicative of where he should be either. So somewhere in between, which, like I said, is probably 230, 235. But if he can stay healthy, I mean, he's going to hit, like you said, 35, 40 homers and potentially even more.
Yeah, I think injury aside, and we can't predict that. Nobody can predict that. Injury aside, he's going to perform well this year. I think you get a bargain. Where you were drafting him this year, I think you get a bargain. And I think you get that sale price because those two last years of batting average are kind of scary. They're going to discount him.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And understandably so. I mean, like I said, I did somewhat target him going into last year. And it hurt, you know, I mean, he didn't deliver for me. He got 24 homers, but the 191 batting average meant he was on my bench for a good portion of the season because, you know, it's just hard to sustain that low of a batting average. And he didn't deliver the amount of home runs that could have made you feel okay with that sort of a batting average. It wasn't like Schwarber, who delivers that really low batting average, but hit, I think, 47 home runs last year. Part of the reason for that again is at bats, like you said. But you just can't get a 191 batting average. That's just too tough to handle in your standard roto leagues, or if you're in a points league too. I mean, that's almost worse. It is worse. But this year I do think, you know, there's some nice things to see in the early going. And I think, the bottom line is this guy can crush the ball when he gets a hold of it, and you didn't let, you know, if he can stay healthy, that's the key.
His DH only designation adds into that sale price a little bit too, because people are kind of reluctant to go into that DH only type of guy. But if he can produce 450 at bats and 35 to 36 homers, he's valuable. And that kind of power is valuable at this point, especially if you're weak in the outfield.
Yeah. No question about it. And like you said, yeah, he is DH only. This league or this year, in terms of he's only played DH, but he did come in with outfield eligibility, because he played some outfield last year, and so that does give you the, you know, like I do have him in a couple leagues this year, able to play him in the outfield, but you're always kind of playing that risk of how much can you sustain the poor batting average, and you know, at what point is he going to get hurt? That's kind of like what you're always playing with Giancarlo.
All right. Seiya Suzuki is, we're going to hit some of these guys that are some, as you just designated them, somewhat surprising on this list. Seiya Suzuki is sixth overall with a 115 max exit velocity. That's a career high for him, but not that much over his 114.6 from last year. 20 homers and 515 at bats. Is there more power potential in here, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. You know, he was a guy who I think sort of trended towards, I don't know if it's a breakout candidate. I mean, he had a good rookie year. He had a pretty good sophomore year. But, you know, what is the ceiling for Seiya Suzuki is, I think, what we're still trying to figure out. You know, he's only in his third year in the majors. But what we did see last year was some really impressive quality of contact numbers. And again, in the early going, they appear to be, you know, trending towards even better. Again, I don't want to read too much into averages and things like that, but I'll say that and then say he has a 94.3 average exit velocity so far in the early going. I mean, that's pretty darn good. Let's see where that goes.
We can read into higher end, right? We just don't want to read into dips too much, because dips are, you know, a pop-up or a weak ground ball can bring that average exit velocity down. But if the guy's averaging 94.3 where he is this morning, we can pay attention to that a little bit.
I think we can. I think you still have to take into account that 115 mile per hour batted ball is going to really pull that average up, just on the stamp, you know, this in the sense that he has a small sample size. But yeah, I think absolutely is what I do is I do kind of look at overall, what are we seeing from his overall, like how many balls that is he hitting hard? And like with Seiya Suzuki, four different batted balls at 110 miles per hour or higher, and plenty more at 100 miles per hour and higher. So what, you know, again, it wasn't in one case where he really had one batted ball that is really high, which is the case of one other guy on this list that we'll get to. I won't, a little tease there. But no, with Seiya, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying, is that the ceiling with him is interesting. Because I think it profiles, if you look at his profile, as potentially a really, really high ceiling. And we haven't quite seen it yet. Only 20 homers last year, .285 batting average. That's fine. You know, certainly not elite. And I pointed out with Seiya Suzuki in the past, he started off miserably last year. So some of that is brought down by just a really bad start to the season. Yep. He was much better in the second half. That being said, those numbers on a season basis are fine, but not great. What is the ceiling here for him? Is it a guy who could eventually be, you know, a 300 hitter with 30 homers? You know, the profile, when you look at his quality of contact, you look at his plate discipline. I mean, he's got some really good numbers across the board. He just hasn't put it together in a stat line from your standard categories, your standard 5x5 categories that jump off the page to you. But I think people are getting smart, right? I mean, people are maybe listening to us, and fantasy owners are getting smarter with some of these advanced metrics. And he was drafted a little more based on the advanced metrics than just the standard, you know, categories we're used to for as long as baseball's been around.
Slow start hindered him a little bit last year. If I were going to look at the stat line and see what might have hindered his power, because he's a great contact hitter, good plate approach, good hit tool. He's going to hit in high 280s, 290s, 300. If he hits 300, that's fine. If he hits 285, that's fine, that he did last year in 2023. But he had these fly ball percentage of just 34%, pull percentage of just 39% last year. A little bit low. Launch angle was 10.8. We're seeing some improvement in those things this year, where pull percentage hasn't improved, but his fly ball percentage is up to 40.5%. Launch angle's at 15.7. Don't read too much into that, because an infield fly ball or whatever could change that launch angle and rip it. But that's what I'd like to see from him this year, is a little bit more lift and a little bit more pull in this game, because his quality of contact is outstanding. And yeah, he has 30 homer potential.
Yeah. And I mean, he's one of those guys who, he doesn't swing to hit home runs. And I mean, that's evident in some of the things you were just talking about, more of just kind of like drive the ball. That's his game, which is great. When you have this quality of contact, that's the thing. It's like, you know, even Shohei Ohtani, we've said this before, he doesn't actually really swing to hit home runs.
Right.
He just hits the ball so hard that it's going to get out of the park. Well, Seiya Suzuki at a much lower level is somewhat of the same sort of approach of drive the ball. But when you're hitting the ball an average 94 miles per hour, those drives, a lot of them are going to end up going over the fence. And so that's where, like, it's not he's trying to hit home runs like Giancarlo Stanton is. It's that he can hit home runs because he's hitting the ball so hard. So that's why, you know, if Seiya Suzuki wanted, if he was told, just go up there and hit home runs, all we want from you is to hit home runs, he could probably hit 40. I mean, he has that power.
Quality of contact. Yes.
Yeah, he does. I mean, but obviously that's
kind of what I want to see. Yeah. Right. And we're at that model. He's 29. It's age 29 season. But still, it's that model in the major leagues where he's right around 1,000 at bats right now. He's going to go into 1,100 at bats pretty soon, probably before the All-Star break. And he's going to have 2 years of regular playing time. And I want to see him get a little bit more comfortable and reach for a little bit more power. I want to see a little bit more pull. I want to see a little bit more lift, because I'll give up a little batting average. If he hits 275, 280 and hits me 30 homers, I like that better than what I'm getting right now.
Yeah. And I think it's possible. I mean, he only has two home runs in the early going. Again, we're talking small sample size. So,
and it's the Cubs in April. So,
and it's the Cubs in April. Yeah. I mean, those home runs really could pick up. And if he continues to hit the ball like this, they will. I mean, at the end of the day, his home run to fly ball rate, which is 13.3%, will go up.
Yep.
It will actually go up because of just this power that he displays. So, yeah, I feel pretty good about it. And again, like you said, it's April. I mean, he started off miserably last year and still ended up with fairly decent numbers. He's starting off better this year. And once they get into June and the weather warms up, you know, he could end up putting up really, really good numbers.
Yeah, he's going to be a great contributor. But if we watch that pull and fly ball percentage and that launch angle stay up a little bit, then, and he just looks like he's his And again, we're looking for intentional changes, and he's swinging a little bit more aggressively. He's not chasing more aggressively, but he's swinging a little bit more aggressively. If he just adds a little bit more reach for power, I don't need him to go nuts, but a little more reach for power, he approaches high 20s, 30 home run capability with a 275, 280 batting average. Take that every day of the week.
Yeah, I agree. I think for those who did draft him higher than, I would say his higher than what he put up in 2023, I think that they're having to feel at least pretty good with where he's trending this season.
Now, Miguel Sano is not, he's a power guy, so we shouldn't be too wowed by his max exit velocity of 114.9, but this goes back to the health thing that we talked about earlier in the first segment, right? This is an indicator of health.
Yeah, Sano, that is exactly right. Sano missed all, I mean, he didn't play all of last season. He basically didn't play 2022. His guys dealt with injuries throughout the bulk of his career, dealt with inconsistency that, you know, I think a lot of people thought he was never going to play again, but then gets a job with the Angels, who I think would give anybody a job at this point. And you want to see, you know, where is he at? What, you know, who is this guy who hasn't really played in 3 years? And what we're seeing is it's the same old Miguel Sano, which does mean he can hit the ball hard. And you know, at least again, like you mentioned in the early going, it, you know, he appears healthy. He appears to be, you know, capable of being that same old Miguel Sano. He hasn't hit a home run yet. Again, he's only had 27 at bats. I'm not going to. He'll hit a home run eventually. Mm-hmm. But plate discipline is as bad as ever. Always had terrible plate discipline. But when the guy makes contact, he typically destroys the ball. Only this is, I mean, again, small samples. That he's only had one batted ball so far this year hit it less than 90 miles per hour.
71.4% hard hit percentage, which means 71% of the time he's over 95 miles an hour.
It's just that he doesn't hit the ball a lot.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's the limiter.
He doesn't make contact a lot. But when he does, I mean, it's going to be hit 90 miles per hour or more, and oftentimes going to be hit 100 miles per hour or more. So, I mean, he'll hit home runs as long as they keep playing him. I mean, he might get DFA'd at any day. But as long as they keep playing him, I mean, he's going to hit home runs. He's also going to strike out in extraordinary amount of time, and his batting average is going to be miserable.
Yeah, it's just, again, how many at-bats is he going to get? And it'd be the cumulative areas. He's not going to help you in batting average, but if he can get enough at-bats, he's going to hit homers and contribute in the counting stats, right? But basically what we can establish at this point is, at this point in April, he's healthy. Whether he can keep a job, whether he can hit well enough to keep a job, whether he'll keep a job with the Angels, whether he'll collect 400 at-bats, that's all yet to be determined. But at least we know, based on max exit velocity, that he's healthy at this point.
Yeah, the Angels are over 500.
I know. Well, they played the Red Sox, so.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying, you know.
Two series against the Red Sox.
Maybe Miguel Sano is the difference maker. Maybe. Who needs Shohei Ohtani when you have Miguel Sano?
Who needs? It's exactly right. But Sano is sitting around on most waiver wires at this point, and why not ride the hot hand? I don't know if he's got at-bats for the rest of the year, but he's going to hit you some homers. If you lack some power, take a chance on the guy.
Worth noting, too, he's had a couple appearances at third base. I mean, if he's able to get third base eligibility, that's a position that's been tough to roster, I think, early in the season. It started off somewhat thin, and it's gotten even thinner with like, you know, some injuries, Young, DJ LeMahieu, a couple other guys. If he can get third base eligibility, it's just, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard because I still am just like really skeptical. I know. Just that he maintains a roster spot. Like, I mean, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, they brought him
Miguel
in.
Miguel Sano, it's small sample size, but it's kind of sexy. 71% hard hit percentage, 21% barrel rate, 101 average exit velocity is 101 flat. It's like, that's pretty good quality of contact. There's not much of it, but when he hits it, it's good.
He doesn't know how to hit the ball not hard. Like, he doesn't swing not hard. I guess like that's not in his game at all. He's never gonna swing not hard. The one ball that was hit under 90 miles per hour, I think was like 50 something. I mean, it was a dribbler that he barely made contact with. That's kind of what you'd expect. But I bet you he still swung hard.
Yep.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. Like, I don't know which hit it was, but I bet you he swung hard on it.
And he's striking out 40% of the time, but swinging strike rate at 14.8 and the chase rate at 29, that's not awful. It's just weird.
Just that when he gets two strikes on him, he does not shorten up.
Right.
At all.
Oh, he doesn't shorten up at all. This is all out swing. Max effort. We talk about max effort pitching. This is max effort hitting right here. This is what it looks like.
And that's who he's always been. I mean, that's always been Miguel Sano. He's never really changed that type of approach. And it got to a point where pitchers were able to really just identify his weaknesses. And I don't think that's changed, but it also just hasn't changed. The last time he did have a season, I mean, 2021, we'll discount 2022. He only had 60 at bats. But in 2021, he still hit 30 homers.
Yep.
You know, so that's the thing. It's like, that's the only reason you would at all roster Miguel Sano is this potential to hit 30 home runs. And I think it's that there is a potential for it.
Yeah, if he can get enough at bats, if he can make just enough contact to stay in the lineup, and he ought to be able with LA. But if there's not LA, there's Oakland, there's Washington, there's the White Sox, there's landing places for him at this point. And 30 homers is nothing to turn your back on here in Major League Baseball in 2024.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know if he's out there. Yeah, I guess it's you could roster him.
Talked about Giancarlo Stanton's stat line making no sense. Ketel Marte's stat line doesn't make much sense either, although quality of contact is always there. It's always been there for him. When's he going to turn it into some top-end power, though?
Yeah, I think that's a good point when you say it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's a tad bit deceiving, at least from a home run power profile. And this one I had to dig a little bit deeper. And his high exit velocities come on ground balls. It's clear. He doesn't hit the high exit velocity numbers don't come on his launched balls. He's hitting a lot of ground balls this year, 56% ground ball rate. And it's high exit velocity on those. It's just not coming when he launches the ball. Not sure that leads, you know, overall sort of this boost in quality of contact, if you want to call it that. It's probably not going to lead to a huge home run outburst. He has three homers so far. That's fine. But I think, you know, his 25 last year, that's probably about where he is, just because that power really generally comes on his ground balls. But it should help him maintain a high batting average. He's hitting at the top of the Diamondbacks lineup with some good protection behind him that should lead to a lot of runs scored. So I think I like his power, or I like his overall profile a lot. I think he could really be a four category guy. He's not really a guy who steals bases. But I don't think we're seeing a huge home run outburst here.
56% ground ball rate, 3.9 degree launch angle, and still three homers on it. He's got a 23.1% home run to fly ball rate because he doesn't hit that many fly balls. Explain that to me. How's a guy more powerful on ground balls as a profile than on fly balls? That doesn't make any sense to me.
I think it's the swing.
What's the model for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is the swing of, you know, when he does, you know, generally go to launch it, it's a different, you know, shift of weight. It's a different, you know, it's a different movement of his hips, essentially, to, you know, lean into the ground balls versus the fly balls. And you know, whether that means he is approaching the ball, trying to hit it on the ground, I don't know if it's necessarily that. His launch angle this year is 4 degrees. Okay. That is, again, super small sample size. So it generally has been around 10 degrees. Let's say that, you know, over the last 5 years or so, it's been around 10 degrees, which is not super low, but it's not super high. But it's really low this year. Like, I mean, we pointed out his ground ball rate's really high. I don't know if it's that he's approaching it saying, I want to be a ground ball hitter. I think he just is sort of, you know, a good hitter with good contact and see ball, hit ball sort of a thing. But his power, he shifts his weight more towards the ground when, you know, and with some power behind it. And when he's hitting the ball in the air, it's not the same shift in weight.
Sees a down pitch better than he sees an up pitch. Maybe chases him a little better. Maybe picks those out a little bit more. It's just an interesting approach. Just interesting stat. Your split is interesting. The ground ball versus fly ball, hard contact and exit velocity. It's just interesting.
Yeah, and it's still, you know, I Ketel Marte is a good player, you know, and he's I mean, for a second baseman in fantasy, you know, you could do a lot worse. I just, you know, if you're looking at this saying, wow, look at this quality of contact, he's going to hit 40 home runs. Like, nah, I don't think so.
Well, yeah,
probably not even going to hit 30.
He had 32 homers in 2019 with quality of contact numbers that aren't as good as, well, I mean, are at least comparable to what we're seeing now. So you think he's capable of, and you just keep looking for it every year. 25 homers last year, 569 at bats. That wasn't bad, but he just got the quality of contact numbers that suggest he can do a little bit better than that. So you're always kind of searching for it, but maybe we just have to accept this is who he is.
I think it is. I think this is who he is. And remember, 2019 was 2019. The home runs were way up that year. He did have a phenomenal year that year, though. 329 batting average with 32 homers in a career, not a career high, but 10 stolen bases. That was just a great year for him. I think that was somewhat of an outlier.
Yep.
But I do think, you know, I mean, again, last year was pretty good numbers. 276, 25 homers, 8 stolen bases, 94 runs scored. I mean, I think that's very, you know, repeatable. I think he can get kind of right towards that about this year. And those are really good numbers.
Sometimes a player posts that outlier year and that's everything he's judged by for the rest of his career. And you're looking at 25 homers going, eh, I wanted a little more from him. But maybe again, this is who he is.
I think so.
All right. Michael Harris, a 114.4 max exit velocity that keeps going up on a year-to-year basis. I like Michael Harris, and if he's developing a little bit more pop and he's still young and we're not at the power ceiling yet, I mean, it shows for a bright future.
Yeah, I really like Michael Harris as well, and I think, you know, we're just seeing the consistent improvements and some really encouraging things overall. Again, small sample size right now. So he's got a 2.4 degree launch angle in the early going, an 18% fly ball rate. I mean, those are really, really low numbers. So right now he just is in this small sample size, hasn't been hitting the ball in the air a whole lot. That's going to regress. That's going to change. Swinging strike rates over 16%, but he's only struck out 11 times in 53 plate appearances. Again, just kind of weird. Some funky numbers going on here. You know, I think the biggest development with Michael Harris in 2024 is he's hitting sixth or seventh in the lineup as opposed to ninth. He was hitting ninth regularly, and I know that frustrated a lot of people because it limits at bats. What it did do, though, was hit him in front of Ronald Acuña. And I do think that is a factor here in that he is not hitting in front of Acuña, which is he's not getting as many fastballs, not getting as many balls in the zone. And so that's just an adjustment period for Michael Harris, which is ultimately, I think, a good thing. I just think getting him higher in the lineup is better, but it does change a little bit right now in just that he's not hitting in front of the best hitter in baseball. And so I think that's just a bit of an adjustment, but still overall, you know, he hasn't quite hit the 2020 season. He's been really close each of the last 2 years. I think he's still very much on the way to a 2020 season, and beyond. And he's posted back-to-back really good batting average seasons, and I think he's on his way to doing that as well.
I want to wag my finger at him for the chase rate, which has been 40% plus his entire career, 41.7 a couple of years ago, 41.6 last year, 44.6 this year. But I look at everything else. I look at contact rate. I look at strikeout rate, things like that. And it's like, should I just be putting up with it? Just let him chase a little bit? Or if we could zone him up a little bit, things might get a little bit better for him here. I'd just like to see that come down. And I'm surprised Atlanta has let him do that, especially hitting at that point at the bottom of the order where you just want to get on base for some of the hitters that are coming up.
Yeah, I do think he needs to bring that down. I don't know if you want to get so much in his head that he's becoming a different player, but yes, I think eventually that needs to calm down the high chase rate. Worth noting in 2023, his contact rate on pitches out of the zone was almost 70%, which is very high.
Yeah.
You know, typically you're not going to make good contact on pitches out of the zone, but so that's part of it. And you'd assume that if he hit 290, with that high chase rate, you'd say, okay, well, he's probably making pretty good contact outside of the zone, but it's still only 68%. It's good for a O contact percentage, which is what we're looking at here, but it's still under 70%, which tells you again that if you stop swinging so much out of the zone, that your contact rate can come up even higher. And so I think that is a development in his game, and I think something that's going to have to improve. But I wonder if that's just we don't want to mess too much with what he's doing. And so, you know, again, this guy's still so young, 23 years old. I know he's got now two full seasons, but he's young.
If he's making contact outside of the zone at that rate, and his quality of contact is still where it is, I mean, it's got to be chipping away at his quality of contact, which is still at a very good level. If he zones up, brings pitchers into him, hits the pitchers he wants to hit, that quality of contact jumps a little bit. His power potential jumps a little bit. So I think that's going to help him. Like I said, I'm surprised it's gone on this long. His youth is probably exactly the point. I think you're exactly right that they just go out there and hit, kid. I think that's why they're batting him low in the bottom third of the order, because just go out and do what you do. Just relax and go out there and hit.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been a great contributor for them. You know, when you look at that Braves roster and it's like, he doesn't need to, I mean, we know he doesn't need to be the star. And so they've just been, I mean, other teams, Michael Harris would be their best hitter. And so he would be right in the middle of the lineup or right at the top of the lineup, and they'd be relying on him. The Braves haven't needed to do that. So I think they've allowed him to sort of have this natural development, which we don't get to see so much out of these top guys. Because they like the teams need them to develop quicker. I think the Braves are in the fortunate position of letting Michael Harris sort of develop naturally.
Yep. And I think it's probably a good approach at this point, and they'll be able to rein him in a little bit because I think it would help him just overall. But I mean, there's a lot of potential here. There's still a lot of ceiling. I think there's at least 2 years left for him to find.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he has been improving. Some of these,
and I don't mean to knock him because I love him.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a great player. And I think, yeah, I mean, he gets overlooked just because of how good that team is and that he's like the sixth best hitter on that team. He's there's a lot to like about him. And again, when you see those max exit velocity numbers, it just gets you excited because, you know, he's capable. I mean, we know he's got some speed, but he's also capable of really hitting the ball hard. I mean, there's just a lot to like about him.
All right, you got to explain this to me. Joey Meneses has had 833 major league at bats prior to the season with a max exit velocity of 110.8 or somewhere 1.8 of 110.9. His max exit velocity this year is 114.2. That's a pretty good leap for a 32-year-old.
Yeah, he hit one Hunter Green slider 114 miles per hour. That was on March 30th.
So this is the single event factor that
matters. This is the one that it just everything is skewed because of one batted ball. Other than that, he has no batted balls over 110 miles per hour. His average exit velocity is under 87 miles per hour, and it would be lower if he didn't have that 114 mile per hour.
Yep.
I'm not concerned about the average exit velocity. We're not talking about that, and it's too early to consider that. He's been a 91.4, 89.4 average exit velocity guy the last two seasons. Okay, so I'm not worried about it, but I'm also not overvaluing the 114 miles per hour that he hit off. And again, Hunter Green gives up hard contact. So his one hard hit ball this season was against a pitcher who gives up hard hit balls.
For his fastballs, that's why he gets hit hard.
Yeah, so this is the one where we just you have to realize what you're looking at, and that's why what I did with all of these guys was look at a kind of a compilation of their hard hit balls. See, was there a bunch of them that were hit maybe not as hard as their max, but close to it? With Meneses, no, he just hasn't. And it's been a rough start to the season for him. I still kind of like Meneses. I still think that there is, there is the potential for a decent season here. But it's actually been a really rough start. He just hit a double off of Hunter Green on March 30th. That was hit hard.
And I think I'm trying to look up the specifics here on Baseball Savant. Baseball Savant has kind of addressed this type of issue where they're going to exit velocity, EV50, for example. So they'll take a look at the top 50% or something like that. Try to take the skewing numbers out of it a little bit so you get a more readable result. And this is a great example of the other end of this, which is with indicators. You can't just live or die by the indicator. This is why you have to look under the hood. You take the indicator as a reason to, all right, Joey Meneses is, where did he show up on here? He showed up at 12, 13 overall in max exit velocity so far. That's interesting. You know, what does it mean? You want to open the hood and see what's going on, because you can't just go by these spiking metrics. You can't go by one particular metric. That's just brings your attention to the player, and you got to look into it deeper.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, Joey Meneses is a guy who jumps off the page when you create this list. You know, you don't have to look. I mean, we can, because we like to do it. You don't have to look that deep into Aaron Judge. It's not surprising that he's on this list. So, you know, he ends up on this list and you're like, yeah, okay, Aaron Judge. But then you see Joey Meneses and you're like, huh, let me look a little bit deeper into this. And that's what gives you, you know, kind of a little bit more. So, I mean, that's why I think in the early going, it's kind of interesting to create these sort of lists of who's doing this well, who's doing that well. And if there is a guy who kind of, I mean, you know, the Ketel Marte was an interesting one where we went to and looked at, well, yes, he has the potential to hit the ball hard. It tends to be on the ground. Okay. I mean, Ketel Marte would have been a guy who probably a lot of people wouldn't have thought would be on this list. And maybe that's true with Michael Harris, Seiya Suzuki, those sorts of guys. But that's why we look at that and we say, you know what? These guys do hit the ball harder than I think a lot of people. Like, these are the things we generate out of these, creating these lists, kind of getting some of this early information. And again, it is mid-April and it's kind of the best we can do, right?
Right. So that led us there. And Joey Meneses, it's like, okay, pay no attention to that 114.2. That was a single event. Just let it go. And Ketel Marte, I think we both arrived at the point here. He is what he is. We're not looking. The quality of contact is good. I don't know how much more ceiling there is here, because he's a ground ball hitter, right? Mm-hmm. Or he hits hard. When he hits hard, it's ground ball. But say a Suzuki, Michael Harris, there's some potential. There's still some ceiling there.
Yeah, no. And I think that's kind of what we take out of this is, you know, nothing's perfect. And so we create these lists and you're going to have some imperfections. I would say Joey Meneses is sort of one of those imperfections of, like, if you just see him on this list, it could be misleading. I think it kind of is, but, you know, and then you just look at his overall profile and you're like, there's a lot that's misleading right now. And so let's not read too much into it overall, but, but you know, this is what we can take at this point in the season.
Check out insideofbaseball.com for the baseball blog, free to non-subscribers, some samples of our daily analysis that we send out to our subscribers, weekly strategy articles on there as well. The Inside of Baseball podcast that maybe you just found is on the baseball blog at insideofbaseball.com, and check out our in-season package as well, season manager package that allows us to help you win baseball, fantasy baseball championships. If you subscribe to us on one of the podcast outlets, that's great, because you're going to know when the new episodes drop. Check us out on Sirius from 11 to 1 on Saturdays and Sundays. Everyone have a great day. We'll catch you next time on the Inside of Baseball podcast.